and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. A bombshell day at the Lake County Courthouse as the man charged in the Highland Park parade shooting changes his plea. President Trump is set to outline his agenda in an address before Congress tomorrow. Local lawmakers on what they expect to hear. And what potential cuts to Medicaid could mean for hundreds of thousands of Illinois residents. First off tonight, a surprise move today as the man facing murder charges in the Highland Park parade shooting changes his plea to guilty. It happened just before opening statements were set to begin this morning at the Lake County Courthouse. Our Matt Masterson joins us now with the latest. And Matt, what exactly happened at court today?
Well, we were expecting the start of the trial. It was supposed to be opening statements, as you said. Proceedings were supposed to get underway in this month-long trial. But instead, right before prosecutors were about to start giving those statements, Robert Cremo III, through his attorneys, decided to change his plea to guilty. He didn't just plead guilty to one charge. He faced 69 charges. He pleaded guilty to every single one of those. It was 21 counts of first-degree murder, 48 counts of attempted murder. This obviously came as a big surprise to everyone in the courtroom. There was not much indication that this was going to be happening. It seemed as though things were going to be proceeding as usual. But it's not a total shock. Cremo last year had just about agreed to a plea deal and then backed out at the last second. And actually, his father did the exact same thing when he was going to go to trial on reckless conduct charges back in 2023, minutes before that trial was about to begin. He pleaded guilty as well to reduce charges in that case.
And what does this plea change mean exactly? Was this a deal struck by prosecutors?
It was not. Lake County State's Attorney Eric Reinhart made very, very clear that there were no plea negotiations, that this was not a deal, that Cremo made this decision on his own and opted to do this without any benefit coming to him from the prosecutor's office. As I said, he pleaded guilty to every single count that he faced. As for what it means exactly, there obviously will not be a trial. The victims who were set to testify will no longer have to do so, and they won't have to sit in court and listen to weeks and weeks of potentially traumatizing evidence, having to relive this mass shooting.
What reaction did you hear from victims as well as the prosecutor after today's change?
Definitely there was a sense of relief that was brought up by one of the witnesses who was at the parade. She was not harmed, but her and her son recounted having to run for their lives. They said this was a sense of relief for them. Highland Park Mayor Nancy Rottering said the same thing. It was relief that this city can move forward now that this case is essentially finished. Victims who were in court, there were many of them. They did not speak with the press afterwards. They did speak with Reinhart, who recounted that many of them were handling this in different ways. They expected this case to begin today, not to end. So it was a very powerful moment for them to hear Cremo accept guilt and know that this case is finished and that he will be essentially spending the rest of his life in prison.
What do we know about what this means for sentencing?
Right, because he pleaded guilty to multiple first-degree murder counts, he's going to receive an automatic sentence of life in prison without the possibility of parole. On top of that, the additional attempt murder charges, the sentences handed down for those can be served consecutive to that, not that it'll make any practical difference because he'll be facing numerous life sentences. That hearing for his actual sentence will be in April, and the victims who were set to testify, many of them will still have the chance to make a statement, a victim impact statement at that point if they want to tell the court how this shooting has impacted their lives for the last 2.5 years since it happened.
Okay. Wow. I'm sure a relief, as you said, for some of those family members and survivors. Matt Masterson, thank you.
Thanks, Brandis.
And of course, there's much more of Matt's full story on our website. It is all at WTTW.com/news.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
And now to some more of today's top stories. The Chicago Police Department still has not filled 250 positions responsible for helping implement court-ordered reforms. A WTTW News analysis shows these vacant positions include all of the 162 jobs Mayor Brandon Johnson had planned to cut from the department's budget last year, but restored them under pressure from police reform advocates. Of the 665 jobs the CPD needs to make changes called for by the consent decree, more than 37% are vacant. But CPD says the department is actively working to fill those vacant positions. So far, the department is fully compliant with just 9% of the consent decree. Chicago and Cook County offices were closed today in recognition of Kazimierz Pulaski Day. Local leaders celebrated the holiday that honors the Polish-born general who fought in the American Revolution and later became known as the father of the American cavalry. The president of Poland also joined the celebration at Chicago's Polish Museum of America, as well as the Consul General of Ukraine in Chicago. He drew comparisons between Pulaski's fight against Russian forces in Poland and the Russia-Ukraine war.
Memories of the life of General Kazimierz Pulaski are extremely relevant today because, as 200 years ago, the struggle against the Russian invasion is taking place again.
And how's your snow shovel? Should be well rested because meteorologists say Chicago came through its 10th least snowy winter on record. Well, meteorological winter, that is, which measured snow from December through February at just barely 12 inches of snow, and that's nearly 18 inches below normal. Don't worry, though. It's Chicago, and guess what's happening Wednesday? 100% chance of snow, y'all. Up next, previewing tomorrow night's presidential address with local Congress members right after this. President Donald Trump is set to outline his policy agenda in a speech to Congress tomorrow night. It comes just over a month into his second term, which has brought an onslaught of cuts to federal spending, efforts to overhaul agencies, and the ouster of swaths of the federal workforce. His administration says it's trying to make government more efficient, but opponents call it a clear abuse of executive power. Joining us via Zoom are Democratic Congresswoman Delia Ramirez, whose district includes East Humboldt Park and Logan Square, and Democratic Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy, whose district includes suburbs like Schaumburg and Elgin. We should mention we did invite Republican members of the Illinois congressional delegation as well, but they either declined or have not responded. Representatives, thanks to you both for joining us. Congressman Krishnamoorthy, first off with you, what are you going to be watching for from the president's address tomorrow?
I think that based on his past addresses, he's had a flair for showmanship, but we need substance right now. We need some guidance. We need stability. We need to muster some unity. His voice continues to be a divisive force in this country. And so my residents and my constituents are very concerned about that. In light of all the challenges that we have, they feel that we should be pulling together to deal with them, at least on a bipartisan basis. And that's not happening right now.
Congresswoman Ramirez, freshman senator from Michigan, Alyssa Slotkin, is expected to deliver the Democratic response tomorrow. Some of what the president is doing does have general widespread support. Where do you think the Democratic Party is in terms of messaging right now?
I mean, I think that the Democratic Party is reminding people of what people have been frustrated about. They're pissed off that they can't afford their housing, that the costs continue to increase. And you have a president that even in his inauguration talked about a golden age. But that golden age isn't for working class people. It's been for Elon Musk. And so I think it's really focusing on, he talks about unity, he's creating division, and we have to get back to the actual policies that make lives better for everyday people. And that's what we're focusing on.
The president has signed 76 executive orders since he took office. That is the most in a president's first 100 days in over 40 years. Congressman, back to you. Do you think the president has been overstepping his role?
Absolutely. What he's done in terms of just take the federal funding freeze, for instance, it's patently illegal. And I think because so many people rose up, spoke out against it, along with taking court action both inside and outside of Congress, we have a temporary pause on that federal funding freeze. In addition, he has also put forward just flat-out unconstitutional executive orders, the most notable being the one banning birthright citizenship. And so these types of actions just create fear and anxiety. And unfortunately, there hasn't been a single executive order with regard to bird flu or dealing with the avian flu, which unfortunately is driving up the price of groceries or eggs. So he's both dealing with subject matter that divides us, that makes people scared, and not dealing with things that are, you know, kitchen table topics, such as high food prices.
Congresswoman Ramirez, do you think the reason that the president has been using so many executive orders is just to go around Congress? And should Congress be doing more to push back?
Look, he absolutely doesn't see us as an equal branch of government. What he's doing is anti-constitutional and it's illegal. I mean, the idea that he thinks he can issue hundreds of executive orders, most of them against the law, demonstrates to you that he doesn't respect the congressional authority. We create these budgets. We gave authority to these agencies to provide resources to the American people. And what he's doing is using his executive orders or bullying Republicans, perhaps, into defunding things like Medicaid. It's disgusting. And so for us as Democrats, we have to use every single tool in our authority and really stop seeing ourselves as a minority party, but the party is going to oppose the obstruction and be obstructive to destroying this country's democracy and taking away from the working class.
And we'll be talking about Medicaid more in the program as well. But I want to move to Friday. President Trump had a heated exchange with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, where they argued over plans to end the war. And here's a little bit of that.
You don't have the cards right now. With us, you start having
cards.
Right now, you don't have your playing cards.
I'm serious.
You're gambling with the lives of millions of people.
You're
gambling with World War III. You're gambling with World War III. And what you're doing is very disrespectful to the country, this country. That's back to you. Far more than a lot of people said they should have.
Difficult to watch, Representative Ramirez. What's your reaction to that exchange?
It's despicable. You see a wannabe king bully berating the president of Ukraine when in fact he should be doing everything he can to, yes, get us to a place of peace, but that is working to stand with Ukraine, making sure that we are moving towards peace. And the only one that is moving us any closer to World War III is Donald Trump attacking southern border partners, northern border partners, and the entire world as a bully and a wannabe king is despicable.
President Trump has promised that 25% tariffs on Canada and Mexico are set to go into effect tomorrow. Many are expecting that that will actually drive prices up or drive up costs for consumers. Representative Krishnamoorthy, could this affect trade relations with our North American allies, of course, Canada and Mexico? But I think 20% tariffs are expected to go into effect for China. What about that relationship as well?
Yes, the answer is yes, yes, and yes. It absolutely not only affects our country's ties with our neighbors, it affects Illinois. Because remember, one of Illinois' biggest trade partners is Canada, for instance. And so you're already seeing, for instance, property developers and other businesses complain about rising prices. And you're going to see this with residents, too, as they pay more for everything that they are buying on a daily basis. And in addition to that, you're going to subject our producers, our manufacturers, to retaliatory tariffs from the Canadians and the Mexicans and others. Now, do we sometimes need tariffs to level the playing field? Absolutely, especially when another country uses economic aggression, for instance, dumping of their products to drive out their competition in the United States. However, take Canada, for instance. Canada has not engaged in this type of aggression, and yet we are levying these tariffs. So it basically amounts to a tax hike on working families and then retaliation against our producers, our farmers, and our industries.
And we're just about out of time, team. Representative Krishnamoorthy, of course, you're a member of the House Oversight Committee, which is expected to hear from Mayor Brandon Johnson and other mayors tomorrow about their sanctuary city status. On Wednesday. I know you're limited on what you can say there, but what, if anything, can voters and the American people expect out of that hearing?
Stay tuned. I hope everybody watches. Look, I think we're going to be providing oversight with regard to a number of topics that will come up in that hearing. I'm looking forward to seeing our Chicago mayor there, as well as others, and engaging with them on the topics of the day.
Okay. We will all definitely stay tuned to that. I know that the two of you both have a lot of work to get there on the Hill, so I'm gonna leave you to it. My thanks to Representative Delia Ramirez and Representative Raja Krishnamoorthy for joining us. Up next, looming cuts to critical health care coverage. But first, a look at the weather. Nearly 770,000 Illinois residents could lose their health coverage. Democrats are sounding the alarm about Republican efforts to slash government spending, including Medicaid, the program that provides medical care to people who are low income or have disabilities. Nearly one in every five Americans. The GOP-controlled House narrowly passed a budget last week that Republicans say could cut $2 trillion from the federal budget over a decade. Among those massive proposed cuts, spending on Medicaid. Here to talk more about the potential impact is Stephanie Altman, Director of Healthcare Justice and Senior Director of Policy at Shriver Center on Poverty Law, and Ted Dabrowski, President and CEO of WirePoints. Welcome to you both, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So, Stephanie, I want to start with you, please. How would a cut like this impact people who are on Medicaid?
It would be absolutely devastating. As you said, 770,000 people could lose coverage within 90 days of that federal funding dropping in Illinois. That program started in 2014, and it's provided, it's increased health outcomes, it's improved people's lives, it's allowed people to work, and these are people who are mainly working and employed. So it would also be very, very deep cuts, not just on that population, but on nursing home coverage for older adults. Half of all births are covered by Medicaid in Illinois. It would absolutely devastate hospitals, our safety net hospitals, hospitals in rural areas who are often the largest employer of people in their city. These cuts are absolutely devastating and would really hurt the population. It would also hurt the economy of Illinois. Our bond rating would probably go down, and it would really harm businesses as well.
Yeah, we'll get to a little bit more of that as well. Ted Dabrowski, we've spoken about federal funding before. Mm-hmm. Why do you think the federal government should rein in spending on Medicaid?
Well, let's be clear, and from everything I see and I read, is that they're not going to cut spending. They want to cut the growth in spending. So Medicaid is expected to grow over the next decade by $2.5 trillion. They want to take that growth, $880 million of that growth. So it'll still grow by $1.5 trillion. So still massive growth. This is the real problem is that these programs we talked a little bit about before, these federal programs are getting so big. Our deficits are huge. We have $36 trillion in deficits. We got $150 trillion in shortfalls in Medicare and Social Security. And we have no plan of how to pay all that. And, you know, it's always the let's say, the lower-income people that get hurt by all these squeezes and tax hikes and all that. That's our big risk. So I think we have to be careful not ballooning these programs, but bring them under control, because if not, people are going to lose.
The proposed reforms include reducing the 90% expansion costs that states receive and establishing a per capita grant. What does that mean, Ted? And what would why do you think it's better than the current system?
Well, yeah, so when we had the expansion, this was interesting. The federal government gave Illinois the chance to expand the number of people on Medicaid, and they said they would pay for 9 out of every $10, right, 90%. And so we made the mistake of thinking, yeah, well, we can take that money, add a million new people onto Medicaid. But now the federal government can't pay those 9 out of 10. So now we're on the hook for that expansion. And we made the mistake of expanding Medicaid because we didn't have the funding for it. If they do cut back on that 9 and make it 5, we've got to pay the other 4, or we've got to cut people from Medicaid. So that's the big struggle. But we expanded too fast, too much. And now we have single, able-bodied people on Medicaid that perhaps shouldn't be on there. So we need to have a good look at it.
Right. I want to come back. Go ahead, Stephanie.
That wasn't a mistake we made. That was a promise the federal government made to us in the Affordable Care Act over 10, 11 years ago. The federal government said, we want you to expand to people who are 19 to 64 and were never able to be on Medicaid before. These are people over 60% are working. They don't get health insurance through their jobs or they can't afford health insurance. And part of what Medicaid does is make them able to be able to work and pay taxes and be members of contributing members in the community. Some others are, you know, taking care of very young children, but we are giving them health care because the federal government and 41 states have decided to do that. 41 states didn't make a mistake. 41 states took that promise from the federal government, and now the federal government wants to break that promise in order to pay for tax cuts for billionaires and corporations.
Right, so on most expenses, it's, you know, 50-50 share with the federal government. So this was a 90-10 share. Now we're trapped. And you know, a state like Wisconsin didn't expand, so they're not trapped with this massive problem here. It's also important to note, and I got a piece of paper here that's got a graphic, and we used to have, in 2000, we used to have 1.4 million people on Medicaid, 1.4 in Illinois. Now we have 3.6. That's a 250% increase. It's massive, or I should say 2.5-time increase. We have so many, we have almost 30% of our population on Medicaid. Medicaid was supposed to be something for the poor, the sick, the needy. And now with almost 3.6 million people, it's become a middle-class entitlement. Too many people are on it, and that's why it's so expensive.
Okay, so, and I'm going to get you all in here, I promise. So last week, members of the state's Democratic congressional delegation had a joint press conference addressing the potential Medicaid cuts and how broad that impact could be.
It's also a broader economic issue. Illinois hospitals and our healthcare systems and supports provide jobs for 445,000 people, and they anchor many rural communities. Hospitals will close. People will lose their jobs.
And Stephanie, aside from people losing their jobs, how else might this impact the economy? You mentioned credit rating.
Right. It's, you know, Medicaid is an economic driver. It drives employment. It helps people be covered so that they can work. It helps employ people in hospitals and in medical centers. It also is, there's Medicaid funding in our schools. There's no nursing home coverage for anybody under Medicare or insurance. Medicaid is the main payer of nursing homes. It pays for over 50% of all births in Illinois. And it's not a middle-class benefit. The people who, the 770,000 that you're talking about who could lose Medicaid make under $19,000 a year. That's not the middle class. And they don't have access to affordable health insurance. So it is really pervasive throughout our society. And we're proud of the fact that Medicaid has grown that much. That's part of what it was meant to do.
Ted, do you think there's a possibility of job loss if cuts like this were effective?
No, I think we've got a bloated government. We have to remember, and I said this before, we have the highest property taxes in the country. We have the sixth highest overall state and local tax burden. We have the highest pension debts in the country by far. We're in deep trouble. And so we can't keep thinking that we can just keep putting money into government and government spends it well. People are leaving the state. People are leaving Chicago. We need to think the opposite. We shouldn't have an economy where nearly 30% of our economy is on Medicaid. It's backwards. With all due respect, I think it's the opposite. We shouldn't be proud that we have 3.6 million people on Medicaid. We should have as few people as possible because our economy is so strong and because people can earn a living. And it's a sad statement from Governor Pritzker when he's saying that, you know, when he took office in 2019, there were 700,000 fewer people on Medicaid. People weren't dying. We didn't have the kind of crisis he's talking about because that's where we were before he took office. So I think we're overplaying this. We need a much more efficient look. May I just bring up one thing? We just had this Moutinho report, the Inspector General report about this $1.6 billion in healthcare costs for the illegal immigrants. Nobody understood that cost. Nobody understood what was coming. Representative Delia Ramirez said it was going to be $2 million. It turns into $1.6 billion. We're out of control in spending, and we better start looking at it. If not, we're going to keep losing more people.
And it sounds like you think that it should be health insurance of last resort for far fewer people. But if that were the case, what is the alternative for insuring?
No, I think this should be, you know, we run a big risk when this many people are on the program. So many people are getting money that we don't take care of the poor. And this gets diluted. We need to make sure that we're taking care of the poor because that's who it's for. not taking care of 3.6 million people.
Maybe we shouldn't take care of billionaires and corporations and give them a tax break, and we could provide health insurance to people who are working. Over 60% of the people are working and only making up to $19,000 a year. They have no ability through their employer to get health insurance or to pay for health insurance. So I think we should. This program is there just for that purpose.
It should be for those people. I know there's, you know, like when Blagojevich expanded the program, he went to four times federal poverty level. So we have a lot of, we've added so many people and made so many exceptions. We need to take care of the poor. They're really the people that need it. We should make sure we take care of. And the rest, we have to let our economy grow and help them.
All right, we'll have to leave it there. Stephanie Altman from the Shriver Center on Poverty Law, Ted Dabrowski, Wire Points. Thanks to you both for joining us. We appreciate
it.
Thank you.
And that is our show for this Monday night. Stay connected with our reporters and what they're working on by following us on Instagram at WTTW Chicago. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10, one-on-one with Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul on his office's actions under Trump's administration. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to be a multilingual law firm that provides translators for a variety of languages.